Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
And we are also pleased to welcome New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli. Thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure to have you on our program.
Thank you. Great to be with all of you.
All right. What do you make of it?
Well, I think there was a collective sigh of relief at the end of the governor's comments. It was, I think, from many points of view, a long time in coming, but glad the day finally came. And it's important that the state be able to move forward from, you know, what has been a very difficult period. And I think the governor did the right thing.
Okay, so I have a question for you, Tom DiNapoli. And by the way, I think people should know, because I've always thought that do we, people who appear in the public media, ought to say what we're thinking. Tom DiNapoli is, of course, my favorite politician in New York State and the comptroller who has done a wonderful job, and a lot of people think so. Now, this would appear to be the year of the woman. We have Kathy Hochul taking office. We have Letitia James as a potential primary opponent down in the city region. Tom DiNapoli, there was a lot of talk around, and the governor accused you of running for governor, his job. So are you going to do that?
Well, I think the only reason the governor accused me of that, Alan, is he was very jealous that you kept saying I was your favorite New York politician, and he didn't like that you were not saying that about him. Look, here's my view of where the whole thing is at right now. We've been through a very traumatic moment in our state's history. By the way, not the only traumatic moment, I might add, in terms of people in high office not able to continue in office. And I think what's key, especially as we are still in the midst of COVID, uneven economy, a lot of federal money we've got to spend the right way, we have to make sure that state government is back on track. And you know, fortunately, we have a transition process. Kathy Hochul will be the governor. First woman governor, true, and that's to be acknowledged. But most importantly, she's going to be the governor. She's a smart person and prepared, you know, to move into that position. She called me today, and she's already had her team working. We need to move the state forward. We need to close out this chapter. What's going to happen very quickly, though, you know, in a matter of months, is that we get into the political calendar for 2022, when all the statewide offices are up again. And, you know, look, it doesn't happen very often that you have a circumstance like this. I'm sure there are many people with their political calculators out trying to figure out what next year will look like. I haven't heard Kathy Hochul say whether or not she's running next year, although one would assume that she would be. So my view is this, whether it's for Tom DiNapoli or Kathy Hochul or Tish James or any of the other names you're hearing, let's put all that aside for the moment. Let's get the state back on track. Let's restore some credibility and dignity to the office of governor, comptroller's office. We have an important role to play in making sure the bills are paid and the pension checks get out, the contracts get approved. We want to be supportive to Governor Hochul to get the state back on track, and we'll see how the politics play out when we get into next year.
When it comes to the Tom DiNapoli political calculator, though, does the Kathy Hochul part of the equation figure in?
You know, the challenge for Tom DiNapoli, I'll talk about him in the abstract, is that he happens to like the job that he's doing. He considers it a great privilege to be control of the state of New York and to have been elected three times by the people of this great state. I am rapidly becoming the guy that's been around the longest. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it certainly means that I've been keeping my nose clean and just doing the work that people expect of me. So, you know, my goal, you know, I've said this on Alan's show many times, I want to continue to serve. I am in good health. I love what I'm doing. You know, a lot of people are speculating about what makes sense for next year. I think I'm going to put any final decision on that off, you know, for now. And if circumstances move away from me because of that, that's fine. I'll be content, you know, running again for this position. But I think really right now, people should put their calculators on mute or silent mode. let's focus on getting some integrity and credibility back to New York State government. And I think that's something, you know, I want to do with Kathy Hochul, with Tish James, with Andrea Stewart-Cousins, with Carl Hastie, with all the leaders that need to keep this state going. And that's why the governor moving off the stage was a very important first step in that regard.
You said in your statement just a few moments ago, my team and I stand ready to assist incoming Governor Hochul as we move the state forward. So for you, what does that mean? What does the assistance in your eye mean?
Well, I said that directly to Lieutenant Governor when she called me earlier today. You know, we have a lot of expertise here, certainly in terms of the functions and the operations of government. So to work collaboratively with Governor Hochul's team, you know, one of the questions is how many new people is she going to bring in? I don't know. I'm not sure that she knows whether there's going to be a wholesale shakeup over on the second floor or whether there'll be a lot of holdovers. But certainly on the technical side of government operations, we have a lot of expertise here. Many of the folks who work here are people who've worked in other, you know, divisions of state government. Certainly in terms of the monitoring the revenue and the spending, the state budget, how it looks for the out years. You know, again, whether it's on New York City finances, where we have our New York City office, or on the Budget and Policy Group that focus on what's happening with the state, we have a good sense of the numbers. And certainly, you know, Governor Hochul will have her own division of budget, but we don't always see eye to eye with them. And I think she would benefit from having our team's perspective in that regard. And then, of course, all the work that our auditors do on ways to save money, which, frankly, under the current administration has largely gone ignored and resisted, I'm hoping that under Governor Hochul's administration will take a fresh look at some of the cost-saving proposals we've had out there, because it's in everybody's interest to make government be more efficient. So we have a wealth of knowledge, expertise, and people who want to serve New York. And instead of having what had often been, at best, a cool piece, if not an adversarial relationship, as we had over years with the outgoing administration, it will be very pleasant to have a collaborative one with Governor Hochul. And she and I have always had a great personal relationship, so I think the strong possibility is there for that to happen.
Controller DiNapoli, it's Ian. Just wondering, when's the last time you spoke with Governor Cuomo?
You know, someone asked me this yesterday, and I actually couldn't remember.
Not recently.
My best recollection was probably sometime earlier in the pandemic when we were all trying to figure out, you know, how to get the money out the door for the ventilators and the personal protective equipment. But needless to say, I haven't been invited to too many of his press events, public events in recent months. So I haven't seen him.
Alan?
I don't know what Madame Beerbaum would be saying about all of this.
she'd be saying it in a language that you and I, unfortunately, wouldn't understand.
she'd be saying it in French for all of you who aren't aware of our conversations. Beerbaum was my French teacher and also a French teacher of one of Tom's close friends. And we kid around about that. But what about the budget? The budget really becomes the central focus here. And you mentioned it, but you could be of great help to her in putting this thing together, couldn't you?
Yeah. But the good news right now, Alan, is that we talked about it when we last did your show. We've got cash. I mean, you've got all this money coming in from Washington. You have tax revenue coming in higher than anticipated. Although people have been worried about our upper-income New Yorkers moving out of state because of the increased taxes, it hasn't shown up yet in terms of a loss in personal income tax revenue. So cash for the moment is not the issue. But look, it's you know what, the middle of the summer, before you know it, we'll be getting into the early preparation of the budget for next year, believe it or not. So certainly our budget numbers people would be of great help to brief Governor Hochul and her team as to what we see as the challenge for next year and the years after, because the federal money is not going to be there forever. If this variant takes hold and we go backwards and on some of the reopening of the economy, we might see those tax revenues going down rather than up. So, you know, there's a lot for us to look at, and we have a lot of expertise to offer. And look, at the end of the day, it's the governor's prerogative to prepare the budget, not the controller's office. But we certainly could be very helpful with information to help frame a better budget product.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, I had trouble saying it twice.
Controller, it's Ian again. It's no secret that you've been there for a while. You took over from a controller who had to step down, Alan Hevesy. And as we think about what Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul is doing right now to prepare, what do you wish that you knew before taking over that office that you know now, and how might that apply to her?
Well, the most obvious thing that I didn't know, remember, when Alan resigned, it was for the use of state resources, you know, the use of cars.
Yeah, so don't do that.
And I haven't. But what I didn't know is that we were walking into a mess with corruption, with management of the pension fund, which is ultimately what, you know, he went to prison for, and the previous chief investment officer also was charged. So that was kind of like the hidden surprise, and there was no way to know that up front. I don't know what hidden surprises she's going to find when she goes in there. Hopefully none. The other big challenge, though, is you know, putting your own team together. And again, the challenge, now she's been lieutenant governor, she may know some of the folks on the second floor in some way. But when I came here, I didn't know, there were very few people I knew in the controller's office, you know, at the management level. And the hard part was really trying to assess, you know, with limited personal knowledge, who do you want to keep? Who should you encourage to leave? And then in terms of bringing in new people, you know, to backfill on some of those positions, how do you recruit people at the beginning of administration? Don't forget, you know, Kathy, at least technically, is there to serve the next year and a half. You know, some talented people may not want to sign up for what may be a year and a half tenure. So she's got to make it attractive, you know, for people to want to work there. She may want to reorganize. I mean, how they're set up functionally in terms of the positions, the policy positions, whatever the titles are, she may want to reshape some of those. Which commissioners should stay, which should go, who wants to stay, who wants to go. Those are very important personnel decisions, because at the end of the day, as governor, she'll set the tone, but she needs, you know, the key individuals in those leadership positions to carry out her wishes. So her first big challenge is, you know, melding together the right team, which I would think will include some people who are there now, and a combination of people who would come in at her request. She needs people around her who are going to be loyal to her. And she doesn't need everybody to be brand new and loyal to her, but she needs key people whose first loyalty is to make her succeed as governor. And then she needs functionaries, particularly at the agency level, that know something about government, that can get a job done. And there may be many of those people there now who are not caught up in any of the, you know, the Cuomo drama, and you know, it would be fine for them to stay.
How would you assess Governor Cuomo's legacy as we speak today?
Well, you know, I think that's always the tragedy on a personal level for anybody that has to leave under a cloud, is that if they've done any good, right, the good will, at least in the short run, not likely be remembered too strongly. You know, I think in the case of Governor Cuomo, and I think he did it today, right? I didn't hear the whole speech. I was actually in a audit committee meeting, so I caught the latter part of it. But he certainly recounted some of what he considered to be achievements, you know, the SAFE Act, marriage equality, some of the infrastructure changes, you know, the notion of the progressive capital of the nation, and so on. You know, you would certainly have to look at the arc of his tenure and say that there were some significant legislative and administrative achievements that he made. How much of that legacy will shine brightly in comparison to the circumstances under which he leaves? You know, that'll be for the historians and, you know, the political commentators and the Shark Talk columns to come, you know, to make that judgment. But it would be unfair of me to suggest in any way that there weren't some significant achievements and milestones during his tenure. There certainly were.
When you look at just what we're going through now, I mean, it seems like it's hard for just not all of us, and I'm thinking about Well, I mean, I guess I'm even thinking about the Trump administration. I'm thinking about COVID. I'm thinking about this particular chapter. It seems like a lot of New Yorkers remain scarred and, quite frankly, don't know where we're going to next. We don't know how we're going to get our kids on the bus in 2 weeks. We don't know how our economic futures look. And it seems incumbent upon, yes, you in elected office, but all of us to figure out what that is and to at some point apply some sort of ointment to that scarring. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that, of how we heal.
Well, I think you're asking a very profound question. And I do think you're certainly right. The national mood and tone is part of it and, you know, probably beyond our best efforts to deal with. But, sitting where I'm sitting, we pointed out I came in, you know, because of a scandal and, was here for the Spitzer resignation, here for David Patterson's, inability to successfully get reelected. Now with Andrew, we haven't even talked about the legislative leaders that have come and gone.
We're only on till four.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean,
it's a long list.
It's a problem. I mean, look, it's a problem for New Yorkers to look and say, what the hell is going on? I guess I would say this. On the good news front, and I see this every day in my agency, you have many dedicated civil servants. They're not political people. They're government service people. And they work very hard to get the job done. And even during COVID, or especially during COVID, they've been on the front lines. And same thing for our local government leadership as well. The reason why Governor Cuomo resigning becomes so important is that some of those big policy questions about the economy, about the ability to get, for example, the rent relief money out the door that's been sitting there, to straighten out the way unemployment's been handled, to go from micromanaging what we're telling the schools to do, where now the latest is each school district decides for themselves. All of this in recent weeks has been the governor's problems have been a distraction, and there hasn't been an ability from the top of state government to provide more clear direction, and certainly agency heads, below the governor level, have been confused because the news has all been distracting, about the Cuomo drama. Well, now that's going to be behind us, and so what needs to happen is we need to give Kathy Hochul the chance to get it all back on track, work with her to put a good team together, and if the school districts would like more clear direction on what to do, let's give it to them. Let's use the best science. Let's not have it be every person for themselves on something like this. And I think with a fresh start, we'll be able to demonstrate that government is working and that is responsive to people. At the end of the day, that's going to be the first ointment to put on the wound. And then, the ultimate healing, a little more civility. I mean, the conversation, the rhetoric has been raw. I was on the receiving end, not so much recently, but in past years of, very negative comments coming out of the governorship. It would be nice to have a governor that's not going to take pot shots at other elected officials. I don't think that's Kathy Hochul's style. I think that sets a model and a standard of behavior that I think people will welcome also. So, yeah, I think that there are things we could do to heal the wounds, and I'm hoping that my office can play a role in that regard.
Can you tell us anything about the conversation you had other than what you've laid out here? I mean, how long did
with
you
Kathy?
Talk?
Yeah. Oh, it was very brief. I think she was calling a lot of people. Fortunately, she called at a moment that I was able to pick up right away. And I just assured her, as I had said in my public statement, that my team and I are ready to help. And I said, I hope you've got some ideas. And she said, Tom, we've been working on it. My team is ready to go. So it was a brief conversation, but certainly a positive one.
It's funny, Tom DiNapoli. You come out of the legislative process. You were an assemblyman. You know your stuff and your politics, but you don't sound like a politician. You don't fight like a politician. You don't go for unnecessary combativeness. And so how did that happen? I mean, how did it happen? You got in the legislature. You graduated to the comptroller's spot. You've done brilliantly there. But you don't have, sort of the political demeanor.
I don't know whether you just insulted me or complimented me, but I'll take it. I'll take it as a good analysis of who I am. Alan, I am too old to change. I mean, this is kind of how I've always been, and it served me pretty well. I mean, maybe there are, you know, other situations where maybe if I had a different personality, I might have excelled sooner, or, you know, I'm kind of like the slow and steady, you know, guy in politics. You know, maybe 20 years was too long to hang around the legislature, but I was able to get a lot done, and it positioned me to become controller. And now, and Alan, you certainly remember, there were people who said I wasn't going to last 2 days in this job,
yep.
You know, and here it is 15 years later. Well, who's the last person standing? And look at all the folks that have come and gone that were supposedly more brilliant and more aggressive and more this and more that. But, you know, especially for the controller's job, I'd like to think that, you know, my personality is a good fit for staying above the fray and doing something, you know, just with credibility and with a steady hand. And that's how I've always been. That's how I was raised to be. Not going to change at this point.
You know, I was struck by something you just said of being, you know, too old to change. And that was basically the point that the governor was making today, that I'm 63 years old and I'm following an older set of rules. I'm following an older set of guidelines, that this is the way we always used to do it.
Well, I mean, look, you know, the women that came forward showed a great deal of courage, and certainly the instances that were contained in the Attorney General's report, and then certainly excerpts that I read, indicated you know, levels of physical touching that, from my perspective, would not have been appropriate, you know, 50 years ago, let alone, you know, 5 minutes ago. So I think it's easy to say, well, you know, we used to do things differently. But, you know, I think, you know, grabbing a woman's private parts, I don't think was ever something acceptable, period. I mean, at least not in my knowledge. Now, maybe guys thought they could get away with it more years ago. That's maybe a different way to look at the question. But in terms of it being appropriate, never was appropriate. And I guess be thankful that we're in a time where we have stronger laws, stronger requirements. And it's unfortunate that, you know, that the laws, frankly, you know, that this governor championed, that the kind of training that I've got to take, right, that he was supposed to take, you know, that didn't take hold. So we, you know, the I guess the flip to being too old to change is that you're also never too old to learn. And I think that for young men, for old men, this should be a powerful learning experience, to look and see, you know, this is serious, and you cannot objectify, you know, women in the workplace. And I'm not going to get into what, you know, the governor says it didn't happen that way. And,
right.
You know, I mean,
no,
that, who knows? I wasn't in the room for any of it. But, you know, we have to take, based on the investigation, we have to take the words of the women at face value. And those kind of situations, they wouldn't have been acceptable 20 or 30 years ago. Whether people got away with it or not, they shouldn't have. If they did, not acceptable. That's not how, I don't think that's how young men are raised to be. And it's unfortunate that some of them turn out that way.
It was a week ago tomorrow that President Biden spoke out and called on the governor to resign. And today he said that he respects the governor's decision.
I thought that that was really the final cap on the incoming oil well, to use a bad metaphor. I mean, I think, you know, when the president of the United States, who is a decent and good guy, you know, said that, and since we all know that Cuomo had said that they were very good friends, and in fact once told me that it was a question of whether he ran for president or whether Biden ran for president. They had sort of did the odd finger and come up with Biden, which I've never quite believed. But anyway, it doesn't much matter. Tom DiNapoli, you know, you've done such a remarkable job, and you keep your eye on the prize. And I think that's an extraordinary record that you've built here. And how do you avoid all of the potential for using power to meet your own personal ends?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I hope, in fact, I do it as well as you suggest in posing the question. But I think part of it is, and this really goes back to my legislative career as well, I've never been surrounded with people who are yes people or people who aren't strong and who don't hesitate to say when they think, you know, they may have a different opinion or approach I'm taking, or make sure I don't get a swelled head. I think it also goes back to my mother. My mother never let me get a swelled head, to be honest with you. You know, you have to remember something about my personal trajectory. I was elected, you know, the first time I voted, which was the first year of the 18-year-old vote back in 1972, the year McGovern was running. But the first time I voted was in a school board election. And the first time I voted, it was my name on the ballot. I was running for school board as an 18-year-old high school senior on Long Island. I had the experience, which I don't know that anybody else has really had it, or very few have had it, where my very first vote was actually for myself. And I won. I got elected. Now, that could either have made me the most arrogant person, you know, thinking that, gee, look at this. I'm 18 and I pull a lever and here I am. I'm already getting elected and all these people think I'm wonderful. In many ways, it was a good learning experience early. I was very humbled by it because I was in a very conservative area that really took a chance on me as a kind of a progressive student activist kid. And I also learned not everybody is going to vote for you. A lot of people did not vote for me. And I got fan mail. I got hate mail. And I remember, you know, I was on the front page of Newsday. Everybody made a big deal. But I remember my mother said, don't get a swelled head. This is a great achievement, but you're no better than anybody else. And I think that always stuck with me. And my staff people, you know, when I was elected, when I would get a big achievement on the floor of the assembly with a bill, when I became controller, I was Tom. I was not, you know, Mr. Assemblyman or Mr. Controller. I'm not, you know, treated in any special way. People aren't running around getting my dry cleaning and stuff like that. You know, when I'm on Long Island, I'm often driving myself, you know, to things. I've been fortunate to be surrounded by people who made sure I stayed grounded. And I'd like to think I never had the temptation for the power grab anyway. But boy, if I ever tried, I would have been slapped down, if not by mama, but by the staff people around me, you know, who certainly would have made sure.
Tom DiNapoli, we thank you so much for doing the Capitol Connection with us, actually the day that Andrew Cuomo resigned. And you mean a great deal to all of us, but particularly to me, because you've always been so decent to me and to the program and to the station, and we thank you very much. And it almost always brings tears to my eyes when, during a fund drive, the next piece of paper comes across my desk, and there you are, having made a small contribution. It's amazing. So thank you.
Well, Alan, the legacy that you and your team have built up is incredible, and I'm glad I spent so much time in Albany to be able to hear WAMC and to honor you and to honor Madam Beerbaum in perpetuity. And Alan,
she goes down
happy birthday as well to you. A little belated, but happy birthday.
Thank you.